We are back with another episode of Being Frank, the podcast where you can be bold, honest, and unmistakable. It's your girl, Malika X, and I'm super excited to start this new series with y'all. The series is titled Be the One. And I have to send a special shout out and dedicate this series to a former professor, mentor, and friend of mine, Dr. Brian D. Samuel. So if you're out there listening, I just want to thank you. He had a real way of talking to his students, and he said something that resonated with me throughout the years, and I carry it to this day, and I teach it to my students. He would say, and I quote, "Everybody ain't gonna make it. You just make sure you're not one of them," end quote. Brian, if you out there listening, I think I did a good job at making sure I wasn't one of them. Love and honor, my brother. And with that being said, let's start the show.
Hello.
Yes. Welcome to the show. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thanks for having me. I
wanted to switch gears with this season or series, I should say, and show a different side of me. I know you had a little prelude that you are only the second one in the series. So I'm not sure if you know how deep we're about to go, but I just wanted to show a different side of my human experience and things that I've gone through as a survivor, that really has shaped us as individuals. We laugh, we joke, we play, but at times, you know, there are some really serious things that happen, and we have deep discussions and dialogues in our circle. So I just wanted to add that part because people see us when we kicking it and everything's good, but you know, we struggle, we have pain, we go through shit. So I just wanted to bring that to the podcast. But before we get into it, let's state your name.
I'm Darrell Brown.
Tell them a little bit about yourself, what you do, where you from, because you've been all over, man. I miss my friend.
No, I miss you so much. All right, so I'm from South Carolina originally. Grew up in Columbia, South Carolina, Northeast Columbia, just outside of Columbia. Went to Lugoff Elgin High School.
What y'all call that? The Met?
Yeah, the Met. Pontiac. I'm a little deeper than that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I rep Pontiac. But grew up there and then went to Newberry College, probably like 45 minutes from Columbia, and graduated in 2013. And then that's moved from there. I moved to Charleston, South Carolina, worked, taught music there, coach wrestling there, and once I moved from there, my boyfriend moved to Wisconsin after he graduated, and then that's how we bounced there. And then I decided I didn't like my job there, so I bounced to Cortland, New York, and now I just graduated with my master's from there, and I'm back in Ohio with him.
Doing big things, big things, but man, you've been traveling and on the move in these last 2 years. You talked about
it's been busy.
Being a hometown kid, and then next thing you know, boom, you are leaving home, and not just leaving home, but going up north. You was in the south all that time, and moved up north, Wisconsin, and then New York, very cold places, nothing like where you from. You also spoke about being in music. And doing, you know, being a music teacher, being in education, speak to that a little bit, because you are just in music, Nikki.
Right. I mean, coming out of high school, trying to figure out what it is that I wanted to do, and probably some of the best advice my mom gave me was to stick with what my passion was. That way, when I go to work, it's not really like a job. And from, you know, me and my mom, that's for me to say that she gave me some good advice. That's saying a lot. So, but I listened, and that's how I ended up deciding that I wanted to do music education. Because, I mean, growing up, I did wrestling and I was in music. And so I just stuck with that. I went to college. I got a wrestling scholarship and decided to pursue a music degree. And I actually got the teaching job in Charleston because they wanted me to coach wrestling. So
Right.
that opened the door for me to teach. And I mean, I liked it the first year. Anytime you do something first is new, so you don't really know what to expect. I got into it, and just over time, by the time I was in Wisconsin and that third year, I realized that I wasn't as passionate about it as I thought I was going into it, and I was more passionate about the coaching piece. So that's how I ended up deciding I wanted to go back and pursue my master's in sport management. That way I could just do that on a college level.
Right, the athlete and trainer and now coach. Well, teacher at well, athlete, teacher, trainer, coach,
Right.
all of those things, but kind of coming full circle for you, really.
Right, it is.
People would not realize, like, I feel like we get a little bad rep, but I mean, I just have to say, and I shouted out my friends in one of the other episodes. My friends are doing big things, and you are just blowing it up, and I cannot wait to
Thank
see
you.
you being a head coach of some university.
No, thank you.
At this point, we are praying for that, and we know it's going to come to pass because this is your passion, and you are on the path and God's plan. We already know it's done, child.
Exactly.
So
Exactly.
moving through the show, and just kind of, I wanted to set the stage for like how we met. And
Right.
give a little bit of background and explain how we met.
You're right. It's interesting because the premise of surviving, we met when I after I moved to Charleston, and you were in the middle of like you're looking from cancer. Like when
Yeah.
I think I met you through Ada. I think I actually met Ada first, and who you also had on the show. And she brought me. This is when you were moving out of West Ashley. So I came over there and I met you through Ada Ed because I met Ed first, one of our mutual friends, him, Troy, and then that's pretty much how it happened. They you guys had obviously been friends way longer than that I had knew about. So they would always talk about you and mention you in references. And finally we came over to that apartment before you moved out. And from there we've just been kicking it ever since.
Right. One thing I remember, and I didn't remember like how it happened. But I do remember and appreciate it. One night, y'all were going out and kicking it, and y'all made time for me. And this really will never, ever leave. Y'all came up to the hospital right before you went out to the club, and y'all was just the light of my life that night because I was struggling through the chemo process.
I remember.
And yes, y'all came in there with y'all capes and gowns and
I
cover
remember.
like doctors, and
They gave us a mask on.
you had the liquor in the book bag, and y'all was having drinks. I was loving every moment of it. So I just remember that sticking out being like one of the main things I remember about Darrell is like really taking time out to be a friend, a great friend to me, and come in to see me. And that was at the very beginning of our relationship, four years ago. It's been 4 years, Darrell.
I know time is flying. It's going too fast.
It is flying. So I do have three, kind of, it's not really three separate questions, but getting into that survivor piece we spoke of, kind of, just going into that and talking about defining moments. What are the three things that you've survived that could be kind of a beacon of light for people that are listening to this podcast? And it doesn't have to be, something crazy serious, but it can be, but it could be just things that help you break out, also.
I guess the first thing that I would say is when I was younger to suicide, when I was in high school and I was 10th grade, 10th or 11th grade. And I still remember it because I remember I skipped school the day the day before I got the news that it happened. So they called me to the principal's office and when I was in high school, and I just assumed like, okay, they caught me, I'm in trouble or whatever. But then I got up to the principal's office and I noticed that it was like a resource officer, guidance counselors, all the administration were in the office. And I was like, this is, I didn't know I was gonna get
Serious.
in this much, right? I didn't know I was getting in this much trouble. So but then they like set me down in a chair, and then and the principal kind of told me, he was like, what happened? And I can't remember if he exactly said like the nature of what happened, but he definitely let me know that like my brother was no longer with us, and so they put me the resource officer took me home, got there, it was like yellow tape everywhere, and I mean
Wow.
from that moment, honestly, I think I just kind of like automatically just blacked out on it. Like I don't remember. Like I was there,
Well,
but I
yeah.
just, you know what I mean?
It's
I
like a
don't remember.
protection. Like a lot of the stuff that I went through, I don't remember the details. It's like the out of body experience where you just go through and you don't
I think it
see
was
it.
like, and it was just like shock. I mean, I imagine I was trying to like console my mom and my sister and my dad at some point, but I don't remember the like the details of it, but I do remember that definitely being something that was like a huge, I guess, moment that I had to get through. 'Cause I mean, losing anybody to suicide, especially, my brother, that I just felt like that took a huge toll on me. And then having feelings of like, well, what could I have done to, make him feel like he would have wanted to stay here longer? Or what could I, what was I to blame? Were we to blame? Having to
Right.
get through that period, I feel like that was something I had to learn to, I guess, survive, for lack of better words. And you don't ever really get over it. You just kind of learn to live with it.
Right, you live with it. You live with it. You definitely do. Is there anything like through that? And I know survival rates among men. I know this is not like I'm not a doctor or therapist or anybody like that, but our moments are our, this is our reality and how we deal with it. And if there's anybody out there who's dealing with something like that, because I know we have friends, relatives, people around us, that is this something, and not saying that, maybe they've been through it, but maybe it's just something that you did during that time to help you cope a little better. Not that it works for everyone.
Yeah, I mean,
How
it's
did
kind
you
of, I mean,
survive it?
it's gonna sound, I mean, I'm trying to think of the word I'm using, I'm looking for, especially being like a gay man. Like I mean, I still am religious, and I really did it. I that's kind of what I had to lean on during that time. That kind of helped me get through. It's just like a lot of praying, a lot of just like self-reflection, a lot of like just time spending and thinking and reading and trying to just make sense of it, which it still doesn't make sense. But I mean, I'm pretty much like, I keep to myself anyway when it comes to, like the deeper things. But so I mean, but that's how I kind of dealt with it.
Right. I got that. We all do. We have to lean on that. And I'll come back to the identity thing because you spoke of your boyfriend. We know we got Joe, and you guys have been in a great relationship. Any other things, two other things you want to speak on about surviving?
Well, you mean from that first one, or all three, or
Or
what?
just moving through that one, I think you gave a good, background and details about how it happened and things that you had to go through and a way you cope with it. So
I mean, and I think it's just ironic too that even though like I use, my relationship, like my Christianity, to kind of lean on to get through that, at the same time, I feel like another thing that I had to survive, or that I mean, yeah, that I had to survive, was coming up, growing up in like a such a Christian, like strict, rigorous, religious household, and
right.
being a gay, but at the same time being a gay, a gay man, and then, coming out to my parents about, me and my boyfriend. That was definitely like, and that was like, even after we started dating, that was definitely a period of like struggle, like like internal struggle.
Right, right.
Is this right? Is this wrong? Is this, like how is this fitting into my life, into my identity? And I definitely think that took a period of that was something I had to survive, for lack of better words.
Yes. And thinking about others that may be still in the closet or dealing with the whole family issue, what were some things that helped you and your family? Not to say y'all in a perfect place with it, but I think you guys have grown tremendously. Even from the time that I've known you with your mom and just speaking about your mom and dad and, Joe and the relationship that y'all now have is very different from even when I was around 4 years ago when I first met you.
I think it honestly, I think it took some growing up. It's like, I mean, there was a period there where every time I would talk to my mom, you would think, like, even 2 or 3 years into the relationship, it was like I just came out to her yesterday. You know what I mean? She would always it was like very frustrating because I don't understand. I was just like, I don't understand why we have to keep having these same conversations, going through these same arguments. And so there was a period where, I mean, we just didn't have a relationship because I just didn't have any more energy to give to caring. Honestly, I didn't care. And so, but I had to realize, you know, at the end of the day, you only get one mom, you only get one dad. And so, I mean, I had to, how much do I value the relationship? You know what I mean? So I came to the realization that I still had to try, you know, and at least meet them halfway. And I made it very clear that I wasn't asking her to accept it. I was just asking her to just like be okay, you know, and just be okay with it. You don't have to, exactly. Like, you don't have to accept that I'm gay and that, you know, I'm in a relationship, but you also, every time I come around, we don't need to talk about it. You know what I mean? Every time I come around, I don't need to hear about you be just, this the thing she would say, I don't need to hear that. And so she went through a period, I think, that helped because she, you know, did some counseling. Yeah. And I think that, and after she did that, I honestly could tell a huge difference. And they actually, this past Christmas, they like opened up our home. You know, she said if Joe ever wanted to come for Christmas for a holiday, she made it known that that was okay, which was a huge step for her to say. And so that definitely is progress.
Yes. And the therapy helps on both ends. You know, that wasn't something I know we like to try to fix with other people and justify, you know, for them, but they really had to work through that themselves. And I think that's what you said. You just gave her time to grapple with her feelings about the whole relationship and you being with Joe. And you pulled back because you were good with it. You were happy. Right. You know, this is somebody that you love. And, you know, you didn't want to, you know, continue to try to make an excuse for why she should accept them, you know, like or prove that she should accept them. Like, that was something she had to deal with. And that's your mama. That's hard.
Right. It was very hard. We actually tried. I think I told you a story. Like, we actually tried to, like, I introduced her to him one time. And like, she just like on the sidewalk of Five Points in Columbia. And she just went on this tangent in the middle of the street, like telling him how he was like the devil coming to steal me away from her. And it was a very, very, very dramatic moment in the middle of the street. She was like crying and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, we really fell out after that because it was a conversation that I had with her before. It wasn't like we sprung a meeting on her. Like, it was like, hey, Joe's leaving to go abroad again for school. I think, you know, it's been a few years now. It'd be a good idea if you guys met, because this is something that means a serious relationship. This is probably who I'm going to be with. And she was like, yeah, well, I can do it. I'll come. Your dad's probably not going to come, but I'll come. But she clearly wasn't ready.
Right. I know it's not funny. It wasn't funny, but we could giggle about it now. But that was difficult to have to deal with. And you have.
Yeah, I mean, in the moment, it definitely was not funny. But I mean, hindsight, you know, you can laugh.
Exactly. All right. That was number two. So, and that was, whew, I know that was difficult, but so much better now. The third one, three things you survived.
Yeah, I mean, those are probably the biggest ones. The third one I would be reaching. I mean, because it wasn't really like that hard for me, I would say. So when I moved to Cortland for grad school, that was definitely a tough period for me because me and Joe, we had been doing a long distance thing for a while. But then to like, leave and have to do that again. And not only have to, it would be one thing, say I was moving back to Charleston where I got you there and other friends, but like I moved to the middle of literally bumfuck nowhere.
Right. You know, Darrell, what I mean? How could you minimize that whole thing? That was fucking going back to school, going to another city and town, having no relationships, no one there with you. That is huge. And then to do it and be successful, I say don't minimize that. That was a real survival tale right there.
It was tough at first. I mean, and obviously the second year was a lot better because I was able to establish like some friendships and some relationships. But I remember, I'll never forget, and I tell Joe all the time, like that day leaving Madison and going and driving there was like one of the saddest days ever. And then getting there, I remember getting in that apartment and just going from like working and having like a real job to like having, you know, and not saying that what I was doing wasn't a real job, but just the whole process of changing careers and going through that while not having physical support of your friends and family. That was something that was tough.
Right. So that was even another thing, leaving the comforts of a job that you knew, which was in the field of education, and moving on to something completely foreign, not completely foreign because you were a wrestling coach at a high school, but this is now at the collegiate level where, you know, you are you without friends, without family, totally different city, totally different demographic of people.
Definitely. But, you know, honestly, it was like as tough as it was, like I really learned a lot about myself during the time, like that time, that period where I didn't have a lot of people like there actually to talk to lean on. And I learned.
Talk to me about that because that was one of my leading questions into the next piece is like talk about some of the things that you had to accept, learn, and that you can now apply to your life because we realized through these different struggles that we survived. There was a moment that we had to learn. There was something we had to learn. That's why God put us in that place.
Right. Well, first I went into the situation like thinking I knew a lot more than I did, you know? So I think the biggest part, the biggest thing that I did take away from that whole experience, at least the last 2 years, was to always just be like a lifelong learner, like a student of whatever it is you're passionate about. Because I literally, and I told my boss all the time, like I came in thinking, cause it was the Division III school. And I came in thinking, you know, I wrestled D2, blah, blah, blah. I got so much to offer, you know, as a wrestler, as a coach. And then literally leaving, having learned from both him and the athletes, like way more than I learned. I was at New Year. So, I mean, I think the biggest thing I learned there is to always be humble enough to learn and be open to accepting new knowledge and new things. That's probably that answers the question. I don't know.
Yeah, it does. The lifelong learner piece and knowing that now you can take that and apply it moving forward. Post-master's degree because you just finished. Congratulations to you, boo-boo. We out here doing big things and we're going to be making some different money moves in a minute. Don't you just wait a minute.
Right. And that's another thing too, though, that I learned. Like, I mean, sometimes in life, like when you want something, you can't always, you know, follow the money trail exactly. Right. Like you, especially if you're chasing like a purposeful career, something that you're passionate about, you might have to take a couple steps back before you can take a couple steps forward. But at the end game, you know, in the end, I think it'll be worth it. And I think a lot of times we get into the wrong careers and just like day-to-day jobs because of the money right off the bat, but it's something that isn't very meaningful to us. So then that's why we're kind of always like living for Friday. Cause it's like, you know, it's a job.
Living for Friday.
It's like a job you don't really care about anyway. So.
Right. And going back over those three things and just thinking about like a defining moment, I know you spoke of several really like big things and even the transition with going to get your master's degree in a totally different city, you know, working at a collegiate level as a wrestling coach. What was or do you feel like even it didn't even have to be one of those moments, but what was like a defining moment where you realized that what you just said about living your purpose? And understanding that we do have to take some steps back to go forward. When did that happen for you?
I think it happened like honestly pretty early on. Cause I mean, as a teacher right off the bat, you know, before you got into like administration and working for the student model that, you know, a teacher salary isn't great, but at the same time, like when it's just you to take care of, like coming from having that salary and then just going and honestly the job I had there, I was coaching wrestling, but it was more of a grad assistantship, wasn't full time. So I was like, I had a part-time job at Dunkin' Donuts, like I was grinding. I would go into the office until practice and like get done at 6, and that was my day, you know what I mean?
Right.
This question, I think I realized, because I mean I realized that you have to take a couple steps back when it over time, after having to get up over and over again, go to Dunkin' and then go to go to the office and then still realize that, man, where's this money at that I was making? I had to be okay with not making that amount.
Right. Right.
This is a question. That's kind of a tough question.
Right. It's a tough question for you.
Yeah. Right. Because I guess the answer is I don't think there was like a defining moment. It was like an overtime kind of realization that I came to.
And that's good. I mean, even thinking about sacrificing what you sacrificed, you understood the end game, though. And I guess that would have really been the moment early on saying I had to sacrifice this comfort of being in, you know, a great school district. I won't name, but it was a really good school district. And you had a job at a really good high school as a coach there that was a big school.
Yeah, you know, no, it was huge. Yeah. And I mean, we were successful.
Program, and you said, you know what? I'm going to sacrifice this one for my relationship, right?
Right.
Two, because I see a different thing. My passion is really to go into the wrestling piece, not just the teaching piece.
Right.
And so I think that part, it all came full circle for you. I think in the beginning, not necessarily during the grind. The grind is just, you know, that constant reminder, oh no, I'm doing this for a greater purpose, a greater cause.
And even now, I mean, I still have to remind myself of that, like in applying for jobs now, like just knowing that because I took a step back to redirect my career, like I can't just jump back in. I still got to essentially put my time in. And I just have to, it's like a daily reminder that, okay, take your time, be patient. You're not going to land, you know, like a six figure job or whatever, you know, your first day, you're right out of graduation. So it's still a daily like reminder and realization that I have to come to.
And that's for everybody, honey. It doesn't even stop when you get the six figure job. Cause you know, in this world we live in, it's just want. You have to be comfortable with where you are, period, in life, even without the six figure salary. And that comes from inside. That's just me.
Agree. No, I agree. And it's so much to learn, like on that process to get into where you be. So it's not like it's a bad thing. You know, you can still enjoy the process and enjoy the journey. I think that's the point of it.
Yes, the journey is the point of it. And without getting too philosophical, that is life.
Right.
That is life. That part we need to enjoy. We need to enjoy the ups with the downs, the struggles, the heartaches, the pains, everything, because that's life. And we all want to be in the living, you know what I mean? So we got to accept that part. So we talked a little bit about what mattered most and, you know, just living fully and being our authentic selves. You know, at Being Frank, we like to be bold, honest, and unmistakable. You spoke a little, or I feel like you put a little breadcrumbs throughout our conversation, a little trail about your sexual identity and how you identify. I know in our last series, we talked a lot about our LGBTQ community.
Which I enjoyed.
You enjoyed it. Thank you, babe.
That was good.
So tell the people just how you identify. And he's taken. I've already said that. So
right.
When you see him in his picture or something like that, when I add him, don't be drooling, y'all. Because he's fine. He's fine.
Oh, he's too nice. No, I identify as a gay male.
Okay. You don't have no other acronyms and no.
No, sorry. No, I mean, we talk. I don't. It is Being Frank. Just be honest. I think it's too many of them anyway. But. I just identify as a gay male. I don't have any other like acronyms or letters to add.
No other letters. Okay. And you've been in a relationship as a gay man for how long? Tell the people.
6 years.
6 years of success. Mm-hmm. Now, it wasn't easy, but it was a successful relationship. You guys are showing and defining the eyes of, you know, gay people can't be in relationships more than 6 months. You know, that's usually how it goes.
6 months, it's like dog years. A month is a year. No, it definitely, especially with the we were talking about earlier with the religious piece, like, and I mean, I'm just so lucky to have him because he was somebody who stuck with me beside, like, through all of that back and forth. Anybody else who was a little bit more comfortable with where they were in life would have just been like, well, you got a lot to work through, so, like, I'm just letting you do that. But he was, how I feel about you, and I know like that this is what's supposed to be. So I mean, it was just perfect situation, honestly.
All right. And do you want to give any background about how y'all met and just some of the whole, because your mom, you know, like that whole piece, or we just gonna leave it where that's at?
Yeah, we'll leave it there.
Okay, we'll leave it there. But I will say I love him because he's from my home state and my hometown, Cleveland, Ohio. He's out in the suburbs. But we know that, you know, anybody from good Cleveland and good people. I'm just saying.
Say that again.
I said anybody from Cleveland, good people with me. I'm just saying. Because he's from my hometown.
He is, right. In Rocky River, just outside of Cleveland.
Yeah, it's a suburb right outside of Cleveland. It doesn't take long. It's on the west side.
Right.
So to end the show, I like to just ask that my guests finish a statement. And we know that we are in a new series of Be the One and talking about survival stories. And I just want to ask you to finish this statement.
All right, I'm ready. Go ahead, hit me.
All right. So the statement is be the one who.
And I got to go now, huh?
Yes. I got that from Oprah, by the way. She always has her guest to finish up.
Be
so
the
I was
one.
Like, ooh, that's great.
That is good. You got to email. You got to email me these questions.
That's not the point. It's supposed to be authentic.
I know. I would say, this is tough.
Be the one.
I'm thinking.
You can't be thinking on the podcast. That's when we lose people. You know, it's just like stale air when we don't talk during the podcast.
I know, but that's a tough question. That's a deep question. I don't know. Be the one who. I'm not good at this one, Malika.
Go ahead and be the one who. What? What is the first thing that comes to your mind?
Be the one who. I'm trying to think of something. All right, I got. Be the one who treats others the way you wanted to be treated.
Period. That sound.
Right.
That's an old one, right?
It is. It is, but I mean, you can't go wrong with that.
You can't go wrong with that, especially as we go out in the world. And I know that you are in the industry as a gay male in sports. It's not always that way. So I think that's really important for people to know. As they deal and struggle with that, you have managed to be successful and make a career out of being the one who treats others the way they want to be treated. And hopefully everybody is able to do that back for you as well as you continue to grow and prosper in your career.
Yeah.
So I just want to thank you for being frank with me today. Oh, thanks, man. Joining me this week on this episode, Be the One. Is there anything you want to clear up? Any clarifying statements, shameless plugs?
No, I don't got any of them.
You want to drop your social media? You want to shout out anybody?
Shout out to Babe. But other than that, no. I mean, I got a social media. I don't even remember my handle, but you... So I'm not dropping
terrible.
It
either. Right. But I do want to thank Joe because he looked out for me and found the title.
You know, Joe actually found that. We were hanging out and he showed me the phone and he was like, "What's wrong with this?" And I was like, I don't even know. And then he pointed it out and then he was the one that showed it.
I'm happy because I'm trying to be professional in this whole thing. I don't need typos. Right. You know, I work so fast on things. So thank you, Joe, for looking out.
It was an easy typo. It's not even
I'm always doing it and typing so fast. So he hooked me up though. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you. Thanks, babe, for coming and doing the show with me this week.
No problem. Thanks for having me. I love you.
Love you too.
That's our show for this week. Hopefully someone walked away with something meaningful and a better understanding of the topics we discuss. Remember, I'm going to keep grinding and keep hustling to give you this dope content. If you have questions, remember legit questions, you can always send those in to social@beingfrankmedia.com. Again, that's social, SOCIAL, @BeingFrankMedia. You can now find this podcast on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Pocket Cast, and Public Radio, y'all. Your girl doing her thing. Remember to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Being Frank Media, where you can be bold, honest, and unmistakable. Peace.